Hey there, welcome to Podmass. Are you ready? Let's hang out. It's Podmass. Podmass is like the advent calendar of podcasting traditions that was started by some podcaster somewhere who recognized that during the holiday season there were a lot of people tuning in. This is mostly because we're traveling and dealing with family and other crap we don't want to deal with, but most recently because so many of us have been stuck at home with the pandemic. And so Modern Witch is joining the festivities this year by dropping an episode every day between Yule and the New Year. That's like 11 episodes of Modern Witch. And I don't know what it says about you that you're tuning in to a bunch of witches for holiday cheer, but whatever, it's cool. I mean, come on in, no judgment. Again, it's Podmass, and you're listening to the Modern Witch Podcast. Thanks for tuning in.
What is that? It's a little bag made from the skin of a toad.
Does it matter? She's tampering in dark sided stuff!
Yet in our own supremely rational time, there has been a dramatic rebirth of the ancient arts of witchcraft.
You're listening to the Modern Witch Podcast with Devin Hunter.
And welcome back to the Modern Witch Podcast. It is Podmass, and you are listening to yet another episode as I am getting caught up on things that I fell behind as I got sick this week. Welcome back. This is an interview with the amazing Chris Alon, and he's actually, I think he's one of the people who is writing right now some really, truly awesome original content that I think can deepen our spiritual practice, but not a lot of people have been exposed to him. So I'm excited to bring him to you if you're unfamiliar with Chris's work. And I've got I've got links in the show notes for all of the books and the things available right now. This was actually going to be one of those things where I had multiple interviews and I was going to weave them together. And I had slated it for that, but the other person that was going to be part of this shamanic witchcraft episode actually wasn't able to make it, family stuff, and then we weren't able to connect, and so it just never happened. But I've had this interview with Chris in the bank for about 6 months. I think we did it in May, and so he's been very patient with me, and I was like, you know what, instead of waiting, we're just gonna put it out there. So it is a little shorter, but again, it was gonna be part of a kind of one of those woven things that I do, and but I decided to say screw that. You all deserve some awesome Chris Alon, so I'm bringing it here on the Modern Witch Podcast. And so again, you can find out more about Chris in the show notes. And my name is Devin Hunter. I'm your host. You're listening to the Modern Witch Podcast, and this is Podmass. Thanks for tuning in. You know, so here's my thing with your work. So I love that I just get to read people's stuff and try to relate to it and see how it relates to me. And I don't really have to have an opinion about, you know, stuff other than does this work for me and does it not work for me. But with your stuff, it's like, oh no, your stuff I think is really valuable for a lot of people. And the reason being that I feel like you came here, like I came to all of this for different reasons than most people who are amongst our world came. You have a similar kind of like background. Like you didn't come here for the same reasons necessarily everybody else came into. And you've been really following your spiritual, your guides. You've been really listening. Yeah. So can we talk about that? Can we talk about like, just, I guess, not without getting like super basic and be like your origin story, but you do have a different story than the rest of us, you know, or than a lot of people tend to. So let's start there. So like, why are you weird? Why are you different from everybody else in this weird circle of ours of outcasts, of spiritual nomads? Like you do stick out, and I love it. I mean, thank God, you know, there are people sticking out. But why have you chosen the path that you've chosen? I guess is what I'm trying to is scratch at.
Gosh, that's such an interesting question. For myself, it's just been a calling, and I know a lot of people say that, but I tell a story about how when I was a kid, my father was extremely religious, and so he would take us to church and everything, and we would pray and sing and talk about God, And we lived in the country, so when we got home after church, he'd be like, okay, go in the woods and play. And so I'd have all these thoughts and feelings about God, and I would play in the woods, and then I would think about spirituality and things, and trees, and the animals and things like that. And when I was like 17, I found Raymond Buckland's a book of witchcraft, and it talked about, you know, about nature as a religion, about the goddess and things like that, and sexuality. And I remember thinking, God is in the forest. Well, that makes sense, because that's where I see God all the time. And then there I found teachers, and I was ordained with the Fellowship of the Phoenix. And then I'm part Cherokee, and so my parents got a divorce when I was like 2 years old, so I didn't grow up in the Cherokee tradition. And so when I was like 30, I decided, I need that training, because it's a part of my ancestors and my culture, and I don't know anything about it. So I found a teacher, Billy Topatate, here in Chicago, and I went up to her and I said, hey, can you teach me these things? And she was like, okay. And so she taught me about indigenous culture, and in her tradition is Apache, and so I learned about the Apache tradition. And here in Chicago, there's a huge Lakota spiritual group here, and so I was introduced to Lakota spirituality here in the area, and so I've learned. They don't really call it shamanism. They call it Native American spirituality. But I've learned indigenous culture and spirituality through my teachers, through the Lakota group. And that's how I became a pipe carrier and things. And so through my other training with my other teachers in shamanism, it just all kind of blended. So I had the paganism, I had the Native American spirituality, I've had the shamanism, and the whole time it's always been about healing, because I'm a massage therapist. So it's about finding balance, finding healing, things like that, and everything I do, and even in my underworld of books where I talk about, you know, summoning the dead, summoning the ancestors, it comes from a place of heart, from a place of trying to reconnect to the ancestors. It's, in my opinion, you shouldn't can ever call any spirit unless it's to find healing in some way or to find balance. And I don't mean you have to do a healing ceremony every time. It's just that when you summon the spirits, it should be from a heart-centered place. So that's my that's my long story.
No, that's good. One of the things that has been incredibly influential on my, just like my worldview, especially when I was a young man, was that where I grew up, it was very common for there to be like powwows and for the entire community to get together and go to the powwow. That's just what you did. Everybody talked about it in school, and then, you know, we would go and do these things. And at the powwows, it was mostly it was mostly like a cultural exchange kind of deal, because it was like suddenly, you know, these are our neighbors and these are people that we know, know and love. And then, we don't really get to see them in their environment. And then we'd go to the powwow and we'd see them in their environment. And I learned so much about God. I mean, just as you're saying, in those moments. And really it was mostly, sitting down and listening to teachers talk and just stories being told by people who had been around for a minute. You know, I learned to do cleansings with sage,
when I was 7 years old, at a powwow from a Native American elder. That was like a thing that was just done. It was medicine that was shared. And it's been super influential, and it's kind of sad to me because people don't really know that. Like they don't get to have those experiences anymore. But I know so many people who did, you know, we grew up in that environment where we had access to those things, and it's just not there. So I feel like I got lucky in the way that I was able to relate and connect to the spiritual world at a really young age and take those pieces of the things that I was experiencing myself and apply them to, you know, another person's experience and actually find, oh, some answers there and how incredible that was. So I think it's beautiful. I find, you know, resonance there in your story. One thing that's really interesting, though, is that we tend to, I think the shamanism itself is like this term that, depending on who's using it, you know, it tends to have these different connotations. And for me, you know, living out here in the Bay Area of San Francisco in California, shamanism tends to be more of a Peruvian kind of, if you say shaman out here, that tends to be where people, you know, kind of go. Whereas I know if I was in the Midwest and I would say shaman, people would tend to lean more towards the First Nations and the, you know, Native American spirituality. So, you know, it means different things to different people in different cultures, you know, that, you know, that word doesn't always translate, that English word for shaman doesn't always translate, you know, perfectly well. So it's hard to understand sometimes the nuances of what it is that we're talking about. So I just want to kind of, if I could, just roll the ball over to you and ask the question, how do you define shamanism in your practice?
Yeah, that's can become such a loaded question anymore, because, you know, back in the day, 20 years ago, when I was first taught shamanism, I was taught core shamanism. And, you know, it was the upper world, the underworld, and so forth, and the totem, spirit helpers, and all those things. But now the word appropriation is thrown around a lot, and I think rightly so. Because I remember 20 years ago, people would, there was a whole bunch of people who were transitioning from Christianity to paganism, and they didn't like the word pagan, and they didn't like the word witch, and so they would call themselves a shaman. And so that was very confusing for people. Especially back then, because it was like, oh, I'm a shaman. I work with herbs and I have a cauldron. I'm like, well, that's not really shamanism. And so now, because I do pay attention to appropriation and things like that, and I ask questions, and I, you know, when you see me, you have blue eyes, lighter skin, and unless I tell you, you can't really tell so much. I have the Cherokee in me. So I have to be very careful about how I present things. And, you know, and my own teacher, Billy, her big thing is that her teachers taught her on the reservation is as long as you have permission from your teachers and you explain who your teachers are, then it's okay, you know. Like, for example, so I have permission to do a chanupa, which is the sacred pipe, but I don't have permission to do, like, say, a Sundance. I do have permission in the Apache tradition to do an inipi, which is a sweat, but in the Lakota tradition, I don't. So I have to be very careful, and every so often, and I'll have people, well, not really accuse me, but of questioning, oh, in your books, is that appropriation? Because you talk about indigenous spirituality a lot. One of the things I do is I share stories. I share the mythologies. And I when I share indigenous culture, I share from a place of heart in education, and it is part of my culture. However, I do understand that there's a lot of, let's just say, broken hearts from the Native American community, and it becomes really hard for a person who wasn't born and raised in that tradition to present, you know. So in my other world book, in my introduction, I actually talk about how I'm really trying to get away from calling myself shaman. In fact, I never really called myself a shaman. I always say I practice shamanistic techniques, but I'm not a shaman because I don't belong to a Native American tribe or a Siberian tribe or a Peruvian tribe. But sometimes in certain spaces, I still use the word shaman because it's a common language. Because sometimes I'll say, oh, we work with the spirits and we travel out of body. And people are like, I don't understand what that means. Do you know what shamanism is? Oh, yeah, I know what that is. Okay, well, that's what we're doing. So sometimes I'll use it then. But to me, I think it's okay to say I practiced shamanism techniques, but I personally wouldn't ever call myself a shaman. It's in the to me, it's like, in the Jewish tradition, unless you're part of that tradition and you have that specialized training, I wouldn't call myself a rabbi. However, it's hard because in a lot of these cultures, you have teachers, but you wouldn't necessarily have, you know, an organization that governs all these spiritual practices. So it gets confusing for people who aren't a part of that culture to where, like, oh, I can go to any book and I can learn about these techniques. Do I call myself a shaman? That's a hard one. That's a hard one. I think we have to make sure we are we're giving props and respect to each of those cultures. And at the end of the day, I went to my Lakota teachers and I actually said, is it appropriate to call what we do shamanism? And can they say to, when you're talking to other white people, that's what they understand, the word shaman. When you're talking to other Lakota people, you don't say shaman. You say Lakota spirituality. And so that makes sense. At the end of the day, if you don't care what to call yourself or call for what you do, ask your teachers and see what they say.
So you've already kind of hinted at this a little bit. You've got this background, obviously, with Native American spirituality, and you also have this background in, you know, more contemporary Western witchcraft culture. And so how do those things influence each other? And I mean, I feel like you've already started to hint on this, but I just want to kind of really scratch at that surface, because you're a good kind of melting pot for these two things. And not everybody really gets to come at it from your particular perspective, being trained, you know, formally in kind of both, you know, modalities. How do those things influence each other to form, you know, essentially what is your unique practice?
So when I first got into witchcraft, I think I did like everybody else. And, you know, I read the Raymond Buckland, the Scott Cunninghams and things like that. And it was all about seeing the earth as sacred, seeing the stars as sacred and things. And in shamanism, it's exactly that. You know, I would say, you know, my training was back in 1995, 96. So it was a little different than it is for today. Back then, you really didn't see spirits in everything, at least not in the training I had. It wasn't until I became initiated into traditional witchcraft that I could really see the connections to witchcraft and shamanism, because everything that we did in our tradition, it was very, for lack of a better term, shamanistic. It was very ecstatic. So when we called the spirits, we went into a trance, and we danced, we did astral projection, or we would send out our fetch to speak with the earth or speak with the spirits. And so in indigenous spirituality, you do the same thing. So there is a connection. The other connection I see is in Native American spirituality is very ceremonial, like extremely so, to the point where you hold the pipe a certain way, you say certain prayers exactly a certain way, you have to sing certain songs four times in the four directions, and the four directions are like ceremonial magic, and you have to use certain herbs with certain things, and so there is a protocol. I mean, it's more land-based, and if you've ever been trained in like the ceremonial Golden Dawn, it's the exact same thing. It's just instead of it being more earth based, it's core the Sephiroth, or the planets, or the stars, or the angels, or whatever. But you know, it's kind of, I think that's why I gravitated towards both, because I could see the similarities. It's just one has a focus on the earth and the other one has a focus on heaven. So that's how I see it.
I like that. I think that totally. Yeah, that's really beautiful. I know, but even then, I mean, if we, talk about, we'll say, shamanism and just kind of core shamanism, because I think core shamanism is a good place for all of us to kind of meet at and say, okay, these are the things. So from a core shamanism perspective, I think we are very much dealing with all of the things, the earth, the stars, the stars within, and as we start to go through and cycle with these things, I think that a mature view sees the similarities and the synchronicities. I think it's hard. And for me, it's hard not to see those things. And that's why, I still draw comparison to both as much as I possibly can in my work. I also think that it's really, being in the culture that is, so obsessed with technology and the comforts that technology bring us. And that's not a bad thing. I love my iPhone, don't get me wrong. But, in this day and age, there's a lot of things that divorce us from the land and a lot of things that divorce us from the earth. So when we have those elements and those aspects presented or at least present in our work, there's this really beautiful human thing that happens. And that's what I love about core shamanism. If we just were to take it and kind of see shamanism from that perspective for a while, we've got these practices that really help you get out of the way so that you can be the observer of, what's going on the inside, the observer of what's going on the outside. And truly, as witches, we talk about as above, so below, and how important of a concept that is. But to me, you don't really see that anywhere like you do in shamanism. I mean, because it's approached in a different way. You're not necessarily going through all these big ceremonial hoops to make those things happen. Instead, you're following this thing that's happening, on the inside that is very big and very real and very transformative, So those practices to me have always been really important. What have you found to be, because if we were to talk about core shamanism, what are the things that you found to be perhaps the most influential or the most important things that you'd want people to really know, hey, you can do this thing and it can really change your practice?
I think the most important thing is to have a very strong connection and relationship to the spirits, and especially the ancestors, and the fae and the elves and the hatred spirits and so forth, and the gods and the angels and everything. I found that if you approach things with an open heart and you can try to really connect and try to understand, and it's hard because, you know, how do you understand the fae? How do you understand a god? You know, it can't be challenging to a person who's just beginning. But I found that, you know, I will never say that a magical practice or a spiritual practice is better than therapy, but I will say by connecting to your gods, your spirits, your ancestors, it does have a therapeutic value, because I can remember being like upset or depressed or feeling like the world was, you know, out to get me because, I don't know, something happened, and I prayed to the ancestors and I said, hey, I need your help. And I can feel those connections. I can feel being supported. And especially in the gay community, a lot of us don't feel supported, especially by our families and things. And I actually have a great family. They support me and they support my partner. But I'm blessed, and a lot of people don't have that. However, your ancestors, and I get the question all the time, if I'm gay or I'm a part of the LGBTQ, and my ancestors are Jewish or they're Catholic or whatever, so will they still support me? And I will say, 99% of the time, yes, your ancestors will still support you, because I have found in my teachings and my experiences that when a person dies, after a few years, they do become educated in the spirit world. They have spirit teachers and spirit helpers and spirit guides that teach them. The other thing is, it's kind of funny because no other person in my family is speaking to the ancestors. They're not. So when I talk to the ancestors, they're like, wow, Chris is talking to me. That's awesome. There's also that, and I have found that the ancestors are really happy that you're trying to bond with them, so they're fine. Long story short, with all the spirits, it's about being supported. It's about you supporting them. It's about an energy. It's about an energy connection. And even if I don't do another spell again, if I have the support and the connection of the spirits, of the ancestors, of the gods, that's all I need.
Yeah, no, I feel that. So what do you do, or what do you recommend when you run into people who have ancestors that perhaps they don't want to work with, or they, you know, have some negative stuff in their history there? This has come up a lot in recent conversations on the interwebs. And so I thought, hey, why not pose this question? So let's say you have an ancestor who was a rapist or committed acts of incest, or was just a horrible, horrible person, and you don't feel not only connected to that person, but the idea of them kind of is repulsive to you. How do you deal with that?
So just with anything, it's about relationships, and you can choose to have a relationship with a person, or you can choose not to have a relationship with the person. You know, I used to tell my students, try to find at least three ancestors that you connect with or you get a good feeling of, because that's who your family is. That's who you're inviting into your space. And I think that, yes, when there's a bad person who dies, I don't believe in hell or anything like that, but I do believe that there's a spiritual school, and that however the gods or the ancestors or the ancestor teachers or whoever's in charge, however they address those behaviors, that's their business. I don't need to know about it right now, but I also don't need that person on the altar. Just like I wouldn't have a rapist in my home, I'm not going to have him on my altar. And partly it's because whoever you light a candle to or pray to or speak of, you're inviting them into your home, into your aura, into your spirituality, into your thoughts, into your heart. Yeah, I would say that's a really hard no. I would never have that in my space at all. And plus, you have to remember, we have thousands of ancestors, hundreds and thousands of them. That being said, we'll probably, if you do your research, I like to use like ancestors.com for 23andMe. I found a whole lot of stuff, but I actually found, I was able to find ancestors all the way back to the late 1700s. But out of all those people, I have four on my altar. And that's it. I have my grandparents, and that's pretty much it. That's all I have. And as far as I know, and what I can feel, none of them have harmed people or anything like that. So that's what I think about that.
No, that's I'm right there with you. So if people want to find out more about you, if they want to follow you, I enjoy following you on the interwebs, where would you send them right now?
I'm all over the place. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I have a website, chrisallen.com. On Instagram, the only thing about my Instagram, it's less spiritual and more goofy. It's just me being myself, whatever. On my Facebook pages are a little bit more spiritual post articles. I also have a Facebook group that's it's called Shamanism and Magic. And it's a place where I invite everyone to share just their own spirituality and whatever they're doing and events and things like that. And I like that page a lot because it isn't just me saying, here's what I'm teaching. It's, hey, share who you are. I like that one a lot too.
Yeah, those moments where we get to have community is always a good thing. All right, everybody, stay tuned. Of course, you can find all of, Chris's books and links to all of the things that we've talked about today. They're all there in the show notes. So check out the show notes if you want more. And stay tuned. We'll be right back after this break. All right, that does it. Did you hear my kitty cat in the end? If you listen very carefully, if you go back, you can hear the faint meow of what was probably Elemancer, but who knows? Both my cats are very talkative. Either way, that was a really great interview with Chris Allen. He's this he's writing stuff that I think more people need to read. There's especially if you're somebody who takes witchcraft as a religion or as from a spiritual approach. I think there's so much to learn from what he's writing about that can really inform the practice. So I'm a big fan. I think you should check it out. You can find out more about Chris by just checking the show notes. And so once again, I'm Devin Hunter. You're listening to the Modern Witch Podcast, and this is brought to you by ModernWitch.com and Modern Witch University. Go on over and check those things out. And hey, if you like the show, don't forget to like and subscribe. Thanks very much, and I will see you in just a couple hours with another exciting interview episode. And you know what? It's, of course, winter time, so we're going to talk about more death, and it's going to be fun because Podmas. Yay, Podmas.
There are forces at work here, dark, incomprehensible forces.